I have been a rich man and I have been a poor man, and I choose rich every fucking time.
I love you, Jack!
For lack of a better word, is good.
Finally!
Finally!
The Bank Bros Podcast! It's taken a while, it's taken a year, but we're here. We made it.
We're in one piece, for now.
To quote the great Tom Brady, let's fucking go!
Let's fucking go!
Let's do it!
Let's do it! Let's do it! Yes! Right, let's introduce first. We're in the blue corner at many, many cages, especially over the pandemic. This man has been seeing Krispy Kreme, lots of pizza, Haagen-Dazs, so he's in good fight shape. We have none other than Sweet Chip Music HBK, Shawn Michaels.
Woo! Yeah!
Coming in on the red corner, this man stays in many kilograms. Many more kilograms, probably. Who knows? This man is a web dev. He's an architect. He is a treasure hunter. He is Suplex City on steroids. The man who runs the business, Vince.
Woo, woo, woo.
we can't use a second.
Rousing applause for Vince.
Rousing applause, let's go, Vince.
Yes!
Here we go. I don't need to introduce myself because of copyright issues. you can call me Rick. Right, let's get stuck into it today. We are talking about dividends.
Right. Yeah, my blood's already boiling, dude.
So you're probably thinking, like, why dividends? Why should anybody care? And it comes back to one of the most common things that we hear is the hopeful message of people when they line up to get their lotto tickets and they say, if I win the lotto, I'm going to take my 5 million rands and I'm going to put it in the bank and I'm going to live off the interest, or I'm going to invest it and I'm going to live off the dividends. So today, we're going to talk about whether that's actually possible or whether that's even a reasonable thing to consider, or whether that, just like playing the lotto, is a mere pipe dream, a mere fallacy.
You know what? Yeah. Let's start out. Well, what is a dividend? What is a dividend? Give us the textbook explanation. We got a CA on the line. We got a non-CA on the line. We got a man who can be a CA, depending on how much you pay him. But what is a dividend? In one line, one sentence, what is a dividend?
It's free money, right? It's just it's free real estate. That's a dividend, right? Surely.
Let's ask the CA. Yeah.
So according to the concise Oxford Dictionary, a dividend is when you buy a share, every few months, they slide it with a few chankuras in your bank account, just in share, you know, just for being you, for holding the share. And that's basically a dividend. A dividend is a periodic payment, either semi-annually or annually. And it's effectively a profit share. It's the company giving you a piece of their earnings for that period.
Right, so it's a distribution, yeah. Right? Fancy word for distribution. It's a dividend. It's what you're getting paid out. Now, let's look at stock returns. Now, you see people go out there and they say, I'm a dividend investor. I just want distributions. I just want to get paid cash every single month, every 6 months, every year. Except when it comes to measuring stock returns, It's not just dividends, right? There's dividends plus capital gains. Right? Now, will you look at capital gains and you look at dividends and you add them together to get your total return? The first thing you got to ask yourself is, how much does a dividend contribute to your total return? Right? Here's a bit of stats for you. Ric Flair done the stats. He's done the numbers. He's gone way back. He's come out tops to help you understand this. 1940. Some of you may not have been around in trading the stock market since then. We were. So we'll help you. 67% of total stock returns came from dividends. 67%. 1970, you also were around. We were. Let's help you again. 73% of your total stock return came from dividends. So now you can imagine why there's a school of thought, this philosophy, this religious belief almost, that dividends are the key to unlocking returns. But hey, fast forward from the 70s. Let's go to 2010. By 2010, on the S&P 500, only 17% of total return was attributable to dividends. Only 17%.
I have questions. Dude, how does it fall that low, that fast?
It's a great question. And actually, that question opens up a whole lot of other questions. But long story short, the reason why it fell was because the idea of what makes a good investment is shifted. In the 1940s and 50s, it was all about industrial era, stable, cash generative businesses. Those were the measures of success. The largest companies in the world were oil and gas companies, were commodities. But what has happened over the decades is the idea of value has shifted. The emergence of tech meant that now people value a market. They value exposure. They value access. And they value future growth and the promise of being able to turn that access and turn that exposure into revenue in the future. And so the S&P has evolved from being a industrial driven exchange to being a tech exchange. And tech companies, by their nature, are very, you know, they're very high growth, but they also, in many cases, aren't very cash generative. And for that reason, they don't return cash to shareholders. They rather reinvest that cash in growing their user base, in growing their reach. And for that reason, the return profile has shifted from being the cash dividends to actually being companies that are able to reinvest the money they earn into growing.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon, prime example, right? I mean, how long did they go before turning a profit?
Prime example. Ding, 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 ding.
Hey.
It's okay. First podcast. We need to invest in special effects. We'll get it down in the next one. For now, it's like a dividend, a non-dividend paying stock. We are cash flow.
We cash light
right now. We cash burn. We are startup. Come on. But Amazon, great example. And Sean makes a great point. And he talks about the last 10 years. And if you look at the changing face of investing and where the value extraction is, you run the numbers. We've run the numbers. Of course we have. We looked at, with the help of our man, De Mordrill, we give him full credit, godfather of corporate finance. If you know him, give him a shout
Bless
out.
Up.
Bless up. I'll keep a picture of him in my wallet. Old De Mordrill, great guy. De Mordrill's done some work. And he went across the last 10 years. He looked at the high PE companies relative to the high price to book companies. So growth investing versus value investing. And you know what? There's more than a 6% gap right now where growth stocks outperform value stocks. In the 70s, value stocks were outperforming growth stocks by 12.5%. In the 70s, that's where you have Warren Buffett come through, Charlie Munger, all these guys are, you know, Bill Graham was before that, but all of these guys come through and he's like, let's run the numbers. I want cash flow generative companies. I want valuation multiples to be low. Therefore, it'll prove itself over time. But guess what? You've got Tesla trading at sky-high multiples. You've got companies like Nikola hasn't even made a fucking truck. They push a truck down the road, right? It's valued at a couple of billion dollars. Value is disconnected from fundamentals. Why? You got Fed stimulus pumping money into the economy. You've got relentless stock buybacks. You've got retail investors buying up everything. Why? Because they like the name. They're buying up AMC, GameStop, BlackBerry, Bed Bath & Beyond. They're buying every fucking thing they can get their hands on. These are companies that are not printing cash. They're not changing the world. But guess what? I like the name, so I buy it, and I push the stock price up. That's the era we're living in right now.
2017, peak blockchain hype. Long Island Iced Tea Company added the word blockchain to their name, and their stock went up 300% overnight. Because people were just typing blockchain into Bloomberg and buying whatever they could find. So yes, there's hype, and the hype has nothing to do with the real world.
So there's an important question that all of this raises, and that is, what does this mean for you as a individual investor with your little share trading account like us? What does this mean for you? What should you do? And I think it's important to caveat and premise what we've just said. Those of you who know the bank bros know that we've never shied away from a good buffet, and we have nothing against Warren Buffet. You know, man, again, bless up, the man's the OG of the investing game. And so a lot of his principles and his support of value investing, it's not fundamentally wrong, and there's a lot of merit to it. Ultimately, a company that is able to generate consistent cash flows through economic cycles, that's able to return money to shareholders, that has a strong tangible asset base, that is a good company. And it's a company that you won't go wrong by investing in. The problem is, and just as you know, Rick and Vince very correctly said, we live in a world that has democratized investment. There are so many things you could invest in today that even though the BATs of the world, which is a strong, solid, high dividend yield company, is a great investment, it's now being compared to an AMC. It's now being compared to a Bed Bath & Beyond. And that's the reality of it. And you as an investor, you have to make a decision between those two. Or probably more correctly, how you allocate your funds between those two rather than selecting and making a binary choice between them.
Let's pick up on that. The decision to allocate capital, the opportunity cost of capital. Where do you put your cash? Vince, you ran the numbers. You said something very inflammatory yesterday. You pissed a lot of people off, people that rely on dividends for a living, people we call widows and orphans in the finance business, people who survive off this, and you went out there on social media without running it past the Banker X media publicity team. You went rogue. Mm. You went off the record.
Only way I do, man.
We had to reel you back in.
What?
And you said, Vince.
What?
Nobody.
What?
Can.
What?
Live.
What?
Off.
What?
Dividends.
What?
Oh my God. Dude, you know what? This is my thing. I'm really irritated by the screenshots with the numbers blurred out. That's actually what upsets me. Like, it's like a Herbalife pitch. Like, people are pitching this thing like dividends are awesome, it's free money, we pay ourselves first, and it's like 20 bucks. I have a TFSA, it's got 24 grand in it. Satrix paid our dividends the other day, 80 bucks. I got myself like a Streetwise every 3 months off a 24,000 rand investment. And I saw that and I'm like, I posted that. And people started chiming in, they were like, yeah, you know what? They've been suckered in by this as well. Because they see the screenshots, they see the hype, the retweets, the raised hand emojis, And they're like, dividends are the shit. If I buy them, it's like a lottery ticket that pays out every week. Guess what? 8 or 9 cents? Yes. Yes, it does. Well done. You just committed all this money to a thing that's going to pay you out literally worse than inflation forever. Good job. That's actually why I had to go rogue. I had to say something. Man, I couldn't take it anymore.
Now, we ran the numbers. Simple numbers. This is not some beautiful mind type shit. This is some easy Excel 2 subproducts type work. If you take 1 billion rands, you have it at 8.4%. 8.4% is a fucking good dividend, by the way.
That is.
Right? That's high. That's high. We're talking high numbers here.
No, that's a big number.
Right? And let's keep it all in ZAR terms, right? Because we don't want people coming back and saying, Rick, Sean, Vince, you guys didn't know about currency translation, etc. And we do know about, trust me, we know a lot more than we're going to talk about this call, and that's because of compliance, right? PancakeX compliance. So, you take 8.4% of $1 million, you've got 84,000 rand a year. 84,000 rand a year over 12 months, that's 7,000 rand a month. Before tax. Dividends have to get taxed. You got to pay the tax man. He's piece of your divvy, right? So you tied up 1 billion rands to get 7,000 rand a month before tax. $1 million. Now ask yourself, what could I have done with that $1 million to generate a return that's more than 8.4% a year? Now, hold on. You might be saying, well, Rick, didn't you say that the total return is also dependent on the capital gains in the stock?
Yes,
maybe,
Rick.
The stock gains will go. Yes, yes, yes,
yes.
But here's what I want to say to you. Corporate finance 101. And you know when you say finance, it means you're a heavy hitter, you're a big swinging dick, you know what you're talking about. When you look at it, you look at the theory, and you look at it in practice. If a stock is trading at $35, it pays you a 5 rand dividend. Sean, Vince, when the stock goes ex-dividend, when it pays the dividend, how much do you expect that stock price to be at?
Well, it should drop by at least 5 rands, because that business now has the equivalent of 5 rands less cash in it.
There we go. Now, when a stock goes ex-dividend, the stock price should, textbook at least, fall by the amount of the dividend. So you're not getting paid a 5 rand dividend, a 35 rand stock coming back tomorrow and the stock is still at $35. You're coming back tomorrow and the stock is at $30. You've taken cash off the table, but guess what? It comes at the expense of your capital gain in that short period of time. Right? So, when you add both up, you add up your dividend gains, you add up your capital gains, it's important to look at the whole picture and not just the dividend, because the dividend looks great. And we'll get into it while we have the convo, but looking at dividend yield in itself as a proxy for performance is a terrible, terrible strategy.
That makes sense because, well, it makes sense on a number of levels, but probably the most important is that the business that you invested in now doesn't have that cash. So that impacts its ability to grow in the future. It means that by giving you that money, it can't spend that money on growth. And great businesses find the balance to make sure that they can still fund their growth ambitions. But as Rick very, very correctly said, the highest dividend paying stocks are probably not the best companies, because it says to us, maybe these guys, A, don't really know how to grow their business, or B, maybe they don't have the money to grow their business. And if either of those are true, that may not be something you want to invest in.
But Sean, but Rick, you guys are forgetting Warren Buffett's number one lesson, compounding. Because of course, compounding solves everything. You're getting your dividends every 3 months and you're reinvesting them, right? So obviously you're going to do better in the long run.
Whoa. Hold on just a minute, Vince. Hold on just a minute, player.
Are you telling me that EMS Twitter might be wrong?
Hold on just a minute, player.
This is breaking news.
You're going to go 1-1 with the Undertaker. You keep that up. That's what's going to happen here tonight. Aren't you the one who just said you took your divvies and you bought a street twice?
Yeah.
I was buying a streetwise reinvesting. You've reinvested into the fast food American market. You've served Colonel Saunders. You haven't served your portfolio. And that's the point. Most people, myself included, big fan of Streetwise, Streetwise 5, KFC, Uber Eats, they've not sponsored yet. Give them a shout out. There is a 9-piece bucket special. I checked it out. Can't say no to it. Weather's cold. Deagle. Speaking
Colonel,
of this.
Call me. Call Colonel, me.
Call me. Call me. Call me. Call us. Call us. We are startup. Call us. Listen. Every single person, most people, take their dividends and they buy themselves something nice with it. They don't reinvest it. Now, we talk about compounding and reinvesting. And the eighth wonder of the world, compound interest. But guess what? You know what people don't think about? The cost of reinvesting. The moment you get paid out a divvy, or you don't have the option to take up the, you know, swap it for more shares or whatever it is, there's a cost associated to it. The second you take the cash out, there's a cost. Because you got to put that cash back in. There's slippage. There's a whole lot of stuff. Worse, you good chance you're going to have an entry point that's different to where the stock was pre-dividend, right? Before it went ex-div. So, in theory, it'll be great if everyone reinvested their dividends, they reinvested all of their stock gains, and all of the shit, but people don't. They take the fucking cash and they go and blow it.
And maybe that touches on a very practical solution. People, auto-reinvest your dividends. That $80 is worth a lot less to you to finance your Streetwise 2 than it could mean going back into that investment in the long term. The marginal benefit of spending that small amount of money does not exceed the benefit from reinvesting it. So yes, there's these inefficiencies, but it is, to be very blunt, the only rational decision when faced with a small dividend amount over a periodic small dividend amount.
How dare you suggest that Streetwise is not the best possible thing you can spend your money on?
No, listen, that's why you need to run a balanced budget. You need to, at the start of the month, make sure you are allocating a Streetwise allowance.
Machacho's allowance.
Make sure that you ring-fence your Machacho's money.
Don't spend Machacho's money. Don't spend dividends on Machacho's money. Red money,
spend
green
Machacho's
money.
Spend Machacho's money on
Machacho's
money.
Spend Machacho's money on Machacho's money, right? So, let's go back to this, because Vince, you had a really good trade on this. And you spoke about how long it'll take you to even get close to earning a living off dividends and dividends itself. Take us through some of the numbers that you ran, and take us through some of the thinking you generated when you said, I could take this cash and do something better with it in my own life.
Easily. So the numbers in that thread and the story behind it is I worked a 9-to-5 for a very long time, started putting money away aggressively, and I'm going to be 1,000% honest. The very first month, I put $500 into an Allan Gray unit trust. I logged in 4 times a day to see if the number changed. That was me, dude. I was there. Everyone's there at that point. End of the first month, end of 3 months in, you get an email, there's dividends, a couple extra bucks, came out of nowhere. It feels like magic, like you've hacked the matrix. It's like you found the source code. Money is just coming out of nowhere. It's awesome. It took me 5 years. Bonuses, it took me raises, all sorts of money to pile into this account. Eventually, I got it up to about 170,000. Then I quit my job. And that 170,000, if I put it in dividends, or even if I put it in stocks at that point, the growth would have been some number. We can work out the specific number, maybe. What I did instead was, and this is going to sound like the hackiest Twitter hashtag shit imaginable, but I invested in myself. I started a business. I used that money to pay my salary. I used it to get some marketing out there. I used it to pick up new skills. I paid for training courses. I paid for networks. And lo and behold, a year later, I generated more than 10 times that amount back in cash. Easy. By taking my time and that little bit of capital, I generated a huge return relative to stashing it somewhere else. Now, granted, it's a risk. Quitting a stable job, especially in the economy we've had the last few years, taking a bet on yourself, it's fucking scary. I don't recommend it, to be honest. But it paid off. Risk brings reward. And from what I saw there, a lot of good options for turning cash into gains. A lot of them, you know, don't need your time. A lot of them you can just let run in the background. As I sit here, I'm 100 and something percent up on a bunch of cash I put into Signia 4IR back in 2017. I've done nothing to earn that other than put the money in. It's awesome. But my man, listen, if you're sitting on amounts that are four digits or less and you're making investment decisions, rather find a way to make more cash. I promise you it's going to do a lot more for you than tying up that capital, not being able to invest it in something that's higher growth, like leveling up your skills. And that was the whole thing, Rick. I looked at this and I went, in picking a dividend stock is not a skill. It's you falling victim to a marketing scheme. That's what that is. You know, learning how to do something and turn that into cash, that's a skill and it's well worth investing in.
That's a skill that's not spoken about enough, bank bros. You look at 100,000 rand, you've got 100,000 rand, you're making 7%, you're making 7,000 rand a year. You've got a 10,000 rand portfolio, you're making 50%, you're making 5,000 rand a year. Right? 50% to make a fucking 50% return, whether you're trading meme stocks, crypto, whatever, it's fucking difficult, right? Every single year. Yeah. To make consistent cash, it's difficult. I know this. I'm day trading meme stocks for the last few months, keeping Banker X alive here, right? Through meme stocks. But let me tell you something. If you've got $1 million and you're getting 10%, all of a sudden it's 100K. It makes a difference. Quality makes a difference. It's why asset managers, hedge funds, even pension funds out there are able to make so much cash for their members because of how big the fucking pool is. BlackRock, is it something, you guys can tell me if the numbers change, but $9 trillion. Right?
That's not a real number. What the fuck? That doesn't exist. There isn't $9 trillion in the world. They're lying.
What? Listen, what's a small percentage of $9 trillion? It's a big number. I can't even fucking do the maths, right? I don't even know. Right. Like, you'll run out of rows in your Excel. But let's talk about risk, because risk is so fucking important, right? Because you can go out there and YOLO into meme stocks and go out, put a shit ton of cash into AMC and 200 times leverage on your favorite broker, you come out, you put in $10,000, you come out with $2 million at the end of the week. Great. But there was a chance that you don't just lose $2,000 on the trade that you put in, but if your account had $50,000, you could have got wiped out in 3 minutes. And people have.
But there's also a massive confirmation bias about it. You know, you only read about the guy who turned his $5,000 into $1 million. That's the guy that makes the front page of those trashy tabloids we now very generously call news publications. That's the guy that gets the news. But the millions and millions of people who lose everything, they don't get the news. They don't get the front page of the tabloid. And that's the reality. The reality is that it's so hard to catch lightning in a bottle, but it's so much easier to get wiped out because of the risk.
And you know what? Let's look at what you're actually getting, right? Let's talk global markets. Look at the S&P 500, the dividend yield. So if you had bought the index and you had to measure the dividends that you're getting from buying the S&P 500, you're getting 1.3% a year, 1.36% actually a year, right? In US dollar terms. If you bought a US 10-year government bond in US Treasury, you're getting 1.3%. Now, for the longest time, in fact, for as long as anyone can remember, bond yields would always outperform the index yields over time. You never could buy the stock market and get a dividend yield higher than the bond yield. It never really happened, right? But now, you have a situation where the index equity markets are giving you more in terms of dividend yields than if you bought a fucking bond, thanks to Fed stimulus.
That's only one aspect of equity returns. That's only dividend component. That's not even the capital appreciation.
Sure, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly the point. So if you've got a situation where your equity markets are outperforming the bond market purely on dividends, and you've got an upside kicker on the equity that you don't have when you buy the bond yield, or you buy a fixed income instrument, why the fuck would you want to go and buy a bond, right? Is one question that people raise. And we also know, as we said in the front of the broadcast, the percentage of dividends relative to total returns has compressed all the way down to about 17%. So, dividends aren't even a big part of the index, and yet it's still outperforming fixed income.
Madness. Scenes. No, but I mean, it's so true. And actually, if I can share a personal anecdote, I think we all have these little fixed deposit, fixed income things with our banks. And I had my money in one of these, and it was chugging along slowly. And the truth is that we don't pay close enough attention to how much money we're actually generating off these things. And one day I looked at my statement and I realized that for a pretty, you know, not a massive amount of money, I was earning literally streetwise money. And I'm not talking streetwise five. I'm talking streetwise two and pop. It was ridiculous. And on that day, I realized that it's so easy to misallocate funds within our own personal investments because we're not paying close enough attention to the actual return of these instruments.
Yeah, or we can just all buy property stocks, right? Oh goodness, I think we lost connectivity. So anyway,
you could just buy property stocks. Yeah,
or you could just do that, right?
But here's the thing about property stocks, Vince. The tax on property stocks doesn't work like the tax on normal dividends, because REITs are exempt from dividend tax. So in essence, your dividend from that REIT is being treated exactly like any other income that you earn. You're not getting preferred tax treatment because it's a dividend.
So are there, like, in 2021, right, where we're dealing with Reddit forums, Wall Street bets, we're dealing with people, you know, yeeting stimmies, you know, into the wall and shit. Does it make sense to go for value investing? Does it actually make sense to do any of this relative to just riding the wave that we're on right now?
Yeeting stimmies into the wall.
Yes. Wow.
Okay.
I'm sure I got that at least 80% wrong.
So, and look, I mean, the simple answer to that is everything in balance. One of the great things, great or terrible things, that has resulted from the last few years is that, or the last few months at least, is that there's been some fantastic value stocks, some really, really high quality companies that have faced significant capital depreciation. You know, so companies that will pay you a great dividend, but because their share price has dropped so much, that dividend is now even better. And that becomes a very compelling investment. And you know, regular consumers of our content will know that we advocate very strongly for having a well-balanced personal portfolio. And the truth is that having a selection of really good value stocks that you got into at the right price can be the most important foundation of your long-term holdings. Should everything be in there? Absolutely not. Can some of it be in there? Absolutely. And how much that sum is actually depends on what your risk profile is and what your investment horizon is.
I mean, we talk about yielding instruments and we talk about divvies, which is a distribution, which is a yield play, right? Every fucking REIT that is out there, listed property plays, it's a REIT play. Widows, orphans, pensioners, risk averse folks, people on Twitter love yield plays. They love seeing that distribution hit their account. You know what's a lot of yield play? Gold. Gold is a lot of yield play. You know what else is a lot of gold? A lot of yield play is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a lot of yield play. You don't get a fucking yield out of owning these things. But can you afford not to own them? There's some people on broadcast probably thinking, I don't want to own Bitcoin. But you are the same guys who own Dogecoin, right? So I'm not the same. But here's the thing. Focusing obsessively about yield can be extremely myopic because you can miss out fantastic opportunities. And as Sean said earlier, the highest yielding stocks, and we've run the numbers, yay, actually underperform the benchmark, underperform the index over time. But quintile two stocks, And let's explain the difference between Quintile 1 and Quintile 2. Quintile 1 stocks have a dividend payout ratio of 74% and above. Quintile 2 stocks, that's fucking wild. It's like
that's
wild.
Wild.
It's wild. It's wild.
Imagine right? take 70 plus percent of your profits as dividends.
Vince is nodding because he knows we're going to make Tax Maverick do that for us. One of the businesses is coming online. Shout out Tax Maverick. Hope you're listening. Hope you are listening. Coming for everything. We coming for it. Coming for your sock, suit, and tie, Tax Maverick. Consider this a shout out to you, Tax Maverick. You get onto the next podcast, you talk to me one on one, and we make this official. But I'm tired of this deferred tax SARS VAT story. I don't want to hear it. I want to hear about tax evasion. So I consider this a call out. Quintile 2 stocks are the stocks that pay 40%. That's the payout ratio. 40% of the earnings go to shareholders. Quintile 2 stocks tend to outperform the index massively over time, right? And if you look at all of the stocks that have high dividend yield, stocks that show a higher growth rate in dividends outperform stocks which have a high dividend yield over time. In the last 50 years, stocks which show a high growth rate in distributions outperform companies with an already high payout ratio 5.5 times. 5.5 times, right? So what does it mean? It means that companies that show stronger distributions over time, in growth, are better positioned to have higher capital growth. But it's actually the inverse. It's because they have high capital growth, they're able to pay out higher or greater growth rate dividends. And here's what's interesting about this. Very, very fascinating. Is once a company sets an anchor in the market that they're going to pay you out a specific percentage every fucking year as a dividend, when they can't, when they won't, when they decide not to, the stock price gets absolutely hammered because they set that precedent. And there's no turning back.
And this makes sense on so many different levels because ultimately, a company that's already paying out so much of its profits as a dividend means that it doesn't really have a lot of capacity for growth. I mean, how is it going to fund this growth? It's giving you all the money it should be investing in its business. But a company that has that reinvests more than half of what it pays out as a dividend can grow a lot further. And it also means that in the future, it can give you more dividends. It can increase the proportion of its total money that it gives you because it's investing in creating that capacity.
And it comes down to time. Like, it always comes down to time in the market. I mean, these, like you said, chowing the Streetwise 2s. For the record, I didn't actually buy a Streetwise 2. I just kind of felt sad for a minute, like I had already eaten one when I saw that number.
Now it's too late. We can see you sweating oil.
Dude, no, you know what? I actually, 3 times this week, I swear to God. But it comes down to time. And, you know, I think one of the things that's very difficult, especially when you're operating with very little cash, and we're talking 3-4-digit numbers sometimes, money and time, the relationship between them, $50 now seems like worth a lot more than $100 later. And that's a real thing. And people get trapped by that. You know, it's important to kind of point out that, you know, it's, you should only, like, if you're going to be putting money away, it should be money that you don't need to spend. And I got to shout this out because I think Twitter people are sarcastic sometimes. I think they exaggerate, but also some of them tweet about deciding between like food and equity. And I'm like, my dude, just no, don't. What you're actually doing right there is you are underinvesting in the only asset you really have at that point, your own ability to generate cash. Don't sacrifice at that level for hypothetical dividend growth. Come on, you can do better. And then the money that you don't need to spend, the discretionary income, another phrase that EMS Twitter loves to dodge. If you can put your discretionary income into a place that generates growth, excellent. The money that you don't need to feed yourself or clothe yourself. Come on, this shouldn't be difficult. And it's when you look at these long-term growth plays, like especially Amazon, I mean, how many percent would you be up if you bought in when Amazon was like a bookshelf? Can you imagine? Can you imagine what like your children's lives would be like if you made the decision and held it for like 20 years? That's the kind of thing that actually creates wealth over time. Not getting a couple bucks every 3 months out of a dividend stock that you sacrificed a lot to buy. Don't do that yourself. There's better ways to use that cash.
No, look, it's a fantastic point. And I think ultimately it comes down to, we often, I mean, many of us are in professional services and we think about what capital allocation means. But think of yourself as a company. Oh, yes. You have to make a capital allocation decision. And the capital is your money. And so you need to allocate that money in a way that optimizes your well-being and the well-being of those close to you, but B, your long-term well-being and the long-term well-being of those close to you. And that means that A, you take care of yourself and you make sure that you aren't making undue sacrifices, because misinformed people on the Twitter are selling you dreams. But then B, within the money that you have and you can allocate it and you have to spend that discretionary extra, allocate it in a way that makes sense. It makes sense to have some dividend paying value stocks if you can get in at the right price point and if you believe in the long-term trajectory of that business. It makes sense for you to also have a proportion of your portfolio invested in those high growth plays, because 20 years ago, Amazon was a bookshelf. Amazon was not didn't have the risk profile it has today, which means for you to have made that play, you had to have been willing to take that level of risk.
Oh, yes.
And you can't take that level of risk with everything.
You can, absolutely, yeah. Dude, like, you know how many times I've heard people say, oh my God, I wish I bought Bitcoin when it was like $500 or $1,000 or whatever. And it's like, dude, I know you, when it was $500, you looked at this and went, this is some dodgy, risky shit. It's internet, weird, crypto. I don't understand it. I'm not going to put my money anywhere near it. Not to say that you should invest in every dodgy thing. People lost a lot of money on those ICOs in 2017. But you should learn, and this is like the key thing, learn how to spot future growth. Because when Amazon was a bookshelf, there was a founder that had a vision, and the vision made sense the way he thought about the world. If you find those opportunities early and you have the cash and you can put some of it into something that, yes, 9 out of 10 times it bombs, 1 out of 10 times it rockets off completely and makes you that much wealthier, look for those opportunities.
And I think extending that thought, Amazon was also started by a very skilled, polished professional, somebody who had a real strong, tangible skill set. And so maybe the solution is not finding the next Amazon. Maybe the solution is investing in yourself so you can become the next Jeff Bezos.
Absolutely. And it is so hard to overstate how important it is to be smart. And I say that in the dumbest way possible. But accumulate knowledge, accumulate insight, accumulate understanding how the world works. If you like look at the way a graph moves of a stock price and you don't understand why it did that, learn. Don't just chalk it up to lucky or unlucky or the gods were against me. No, there's mechanics to all of this. There's value chains. There's the way things work. There's things people buy. There's things people sell. You can learn how to do this. It's not black magic. It's just knowledge. And if you learn how to do this, if you actually accumulate that stuff, you're able to make better decisions. At the very least, you're able to make less bad ones. And I look at this, you know, a couple hundred bucks that you could have spent somewhere else on a stock that pays almost no dividends, you're not losing money technically, but you kind of are, because you could have done something way better with that money, you know, to make yourself a better and more sophisticated investor. And that is also super important. Like I think almost entirely by accident, the industry has done a very good job of making finance and investing look super complicated. You need like a 3-year degree to even understand what these things are. But you know what? You don't need a degree to understand that people sell things, people buy things. There are some things people will always buy. There are some reasons people will always make the same decisions. Just learn things, observe and learn. It makes a huge difference when it comes time to make those decisions.
You know, I know it sounds cliche, it's like betting on yourself, put money in yourself, right? But will you think about it? and you develop skills that are agile, resilient, future-proof, marketable, commercial skills, that $1 million that you're putting in at 8.4% yield, early $7K a month gross on your dividend, ask yourself, could I have made more than 8.4% a year with $1 million? Listen, I'm a gambling man, right? I'll tell you something. I will make more than 84 grand on half of that. On 100 grand even. Fuck, on 10 grand, you know? Why? Because if you decided, you know what, I'm going to take that cash, I'm going to put it into, you know, I'm not even saying spill a fucking roulette wheel. Put it into something you believe in, right? If you know, you know what, this financial modeling course is going to put me in a new bracket, I can get a new job, or I can get a promotion, or I can land a new gig, or I can do some side hustle consulting, and it's going to pay me. Guess what? People pay for specialization. You know this, Vince. You run a company where nobody can get your type of skills when it comes to tech and dev. And guess what? They're going to have to pay you for it. Why? Because you're a price setter. You have a monopoly over the pricing because of how fucking good you are and what you do. And similarly, if you have skills that are base level skills, and you have something that in the labor market has excess supply, can be replaced, and any fucking person can do it, then you're not going to command the highest level of earnings. And you're going to have to then rely on other companies to generate that return for you. You're going to have to rely on that small percentage dividend each year. You've got to put your faith in returns, in other companies, in other people, in everything else except yourself. But it's proven time and again, albeit a lot more risky, rolling the dice on making sure you improve as a person, and not even financially. You don't have to earn a high salary. Place a premium on your time, right? On your experiences, on the time you spend with family, your ability to go to the gym, your ability to wake up half an hour later and not sit in traffic for 2 hours. These are small, little, intangible things, but modern personal finance has skewed our understanding of what it means to be wealthy to such an extent that we fail to acknowledge intangible wealth and we completely dismiss it. And that makes us poorer.
Yep. Can't think about the solution if you're stuck on the problem. And, you know, this actually, I will say one of the things I did that changed my life was I moved so I wouldn't have to commute anymore. I moved from a suburban town into a city. Back in the good old days when the trains used to work, you could catch a train from like the outlying suburbs into Cape Town, hour and a half each way every day. The month after I moved in, I suddenly had 3 hours a day extra that I could do whatever I wanted with. I used that time to learn. I learned extra coding. I learned extra marketing skills. I picked up some moonlighting clients. All of that stuff added up. Slowly but surely, it added up to giving me the foundation to move to the next phase. It's, to me, I see what you call excess there, Rick. I see that in people that are just sort of given up. They have time. They're not immediately in danger. They have a roof over their heads. They have time. And they're kind of idling it because they have no direction. And there's so much untapped potential there. Because like the world, and I say this as someone in the tech industry specifically, the world is crying out for engineering skills. Nobody, I think, fully understands just how big software is as a thing and how early it still is. There's still Andreessen Horowitz, all these future-looking VCs. Software is going to eat the world, and it's only just started now. There's this enormous opportunity right there. It's online. It's on the device in your house. You have everything you need to start investing in yourself. And it sounds corny, and I hate saying it because other people that I don't like also say it, but it's true. If you increase your ability to spot opportunities, take advantage of them, build networks, generate cash, no matter what you spend on that, in the first couple of years, you're going to see outsized returns. Leave the investing for dividends, leave that to when cash is no longer a concern. When you can just sail from one payslip to the next, not even thinking about it, that's when you start thinking about, here's 10 grand I don't need right now. What can I do with it? Here's 50 grand. I just got a bonus. I just sold something. I don't need to spend this money, ever. I can just do something else with it. That's where you start building wealth.
Treat yourself like a growth stock.
Yeah. And within your capital allocation, Remember that quantum matters. Value stocks are fantastic and they're valuable, as the name suggests. But you need quantum. So if you're playing, you know, if you're playing with a couple $100 or a couple $1,000, it's good, great. You'll earn 20, 30 rands as your dividend. But if you take those couple hundred, couple $1,000 and invest them in something, invest them in yourself, then you leverage those returns. You scale up the quantum that you could potentially later invest in those yielding instruments. And that's the key message. That's the bottom line.
Now, listen, we've been looking at dividends as it relates to an investor, a retail investor, catching $23 a month, showing it off on Twitter, getting excited, being, you know, just it's sad, it's depressing, right? But let's look at it from the company side, yeah. Right? We've sat on the table and advised many companies on capital structure opportunities, returning cash, classic corporate finance stuff 101. What do you do with cash? Let's run through some of the options, right? One option is a dividend. Give the fucking cash back. Now, you give the cash back to keep the investors happy, also because you set the precedent in the past and you can't not give them the cash anymore because they'll punish your stock. But you also have the opportunity to take that cash and put it somewhere else. Where can you put it? You can put it in your own company, right? And if the return on invested capital is higher than it would be on a dividend payout, it makes sense for you to invest it back in your own company, right? Which is intrinsically what many growth companies do. Okay, fine, they don't have the cash to pay out, but they put it back into their own company to grow it. Second way, go out and do M&A, right? Go and buy companies. Now, we have to caveat, as bank bros, we've done many M&A deals over the years. Hey, we've done some fucking bad deals too. Let me say that. We've had some bad matches. You know? We've dropped the title at WrestleMania before. Many times. We've come out number 28 in the Royal Rumble and we didn't win the Rumble. But here's what we can say. M&A. Mergers and acquisitions. Mergers and executions. For the most part, is value destructive. Why? Why? Let it marinate. I said what I said. Mergers and acquisitions, often value destructive. Why? Simple. People overpay. All the time. All the fucking time. There's many reasons. You know, people overestimate how easy it is to integrate companies. Rick is on the line. He knows. He's done the strategic consult for integrations and mergers, and he knows people, things take longer than they should. They cost more than they should. Cultural fit is massive. Doesn't happen. But guess what? Will you pay a bid premium? Basically, extra money for the company. 25%, 30%, 40%. It means that if you were to buy the company right now in the stock market, that's trading for $100 million, small company, you're paying $140 million. You paid $40 million extra. What happens? Fast forward 12 months, 18 months, 36 months. Bang, impairment. Let's write it down. Why? Because the value of the company is not what you paid for it. You're writing it down. You overpaid in the first place. The single most important driver on any deal is how much you pay for it upfront. Not your synergies. Not your magical pull that you're going to trigger and take over the world. Not any fucking thing else, but how much you pay day one. So if you see a company that's highly acquisitive, instead of paying you out your dividend, maybe you should look closely at that company, because growth, and not all growth, is good growth.
And I mean, it holds true for personal finance as well. The single largest determinant on whether an investment is a good investment or not is how much you pay for it. There is such thing as a good company that you overpay for. There is such thing as a not so great company that is so cheap that it's worth investing in. It comes down to how much you pay. It holds true for companies. It holds true for personal finance.
Vince, what's the one thing that you've overpaid for? Can be anything.
Easily t-shirts, because I'm emotional about them. Easily. Dude, I spent far too much on importing cartoon shirts, dude. I swear to God, it's a sickness.
You brought up t-shirts, Vince. And I'm glad you did. Because now, you can provide the Stog Soldiers, Banger X community, the people around, the millions of people around the world, who want to know about the online store.
I know. It is so freaking cool. We finally got the thing together. Dude, pre-orders happening real flippin' soon. Like, just keep an eye out. We're going to go live. It's going to be awesome. There are shirts. We have delivered unto you the promise of Panker X merch. It's happening.
And let me tell you, for free, those shirts are fire.
Nice.
Fire. Like prime late 90s Kane. Fire.
Oh, yes. Woo! Dude, only the best for our Stonk Soldiers, man. Come on. We know this. This is who we are. Only the best.
100%. So, let's wrap it up with the best strategies if you are keen on looking at dividends. We've said have a balanced portfolio. Look at other opportunities for yield. Consider investing in yourself. Measure up the quantum, because that's fucking important. How much you put in is effectively how much you're going to get out, right? Simple math. Compounding, massively important. Put the divvies back in the fucking company. But most importantly, and probably the single biggest takeaway from all of this is never have a one-dimensional view when it comes to returns. Have a multifaceted, multi-level perspective on what it means to have a return. And returns are not always tangible. Returns are not always cash in your pocket. And returns are not always that little notification that you get every 3, 6, or 12 months. Returns can be any number of things that you place emphasis on. And every investor places emphasis on different things. Yeah. Find out what's important to you.
I'm going to tell you right there, that is the biggest thing you're going to learn when you move through this. Like, because I started saving, the only reason I started saving in 2013, I wanted a new gaming PC. That's what I wanted. My target was 25 grand. I wanted a sick gaming PC.
Alienware.
Oh, yes.
That Pentium 4.
Nice. And then I got there. I got to the amount and I looked at it and I was like, I can get a gaming PC. And then I looked at my payslip and I was like, oh, or I can pay myself for a month. And the value of that money changed. It's a crazy thing to think about, but suddenly it wasn't just measuring in terms of PCs or, you know, eating out or, you know, KFC Streetwise. I started measuring this in how many months can I get away with not working for a boss? How many experiences can I have now that I couldn't have had before? It changes you. It absolutely changes you when you know, no matter what situation you're in, you have this buffer in the background. Suddenly, you know, you stop putting up with shit in your life because you realize, hey, this is actually a crap job, but I can't quit because I need the money. Well, what if you didn't? You know, what if it took you a while, but you suddenly didn't need the money anymore? Now, that 10 grand that you would have spent on booze in 2 weekends, it becomes life-changing because it lets you think differently. And it is so hard to overstate how powerful that is when you start getting to that point. It is worth it. It is worth holding out. If you think that you're currently in a situation where your money is a problem and you have a plan to get out of that, trust me, rolling up, getting the maximum gain for your money, it is worth it in ways you don't even imagine yet.
Sean. Bless us. Bless us.
I think that's it. I think he done it. I think he done it.
He did it. He said, that is the gospel. You are preaching from the Banker X gospel. You are preaching. I just want to go out and buy some meme stocks right now.
Do it.
Let me cash out my pension, buy some meme stocks on leverage. We may or may not have a second podcast. Right. Here we go. First episode. Bank Bros. We've done it. Thank you.
It's good.
Thank you, Sean.
There's more coming.
There's more coming.
There's more coming.
There's more coming. There's more coming. Here we go.
This stuff, man.
And hopefully we can get some of that sweet, sweet sponsorship money.
Whoa.
I don't care. I don't care. I will plug hot single ladies in your area. I'll do it.
All right. We will plug it. And we will keep plugging. Listen, we plug those hot single ladies in the area. But listen, we'll catch you next week. Dividends, we out. Hit our music!